This meeting of the House Transportation Committee will now come to order. It is 1:34 p.m. on Tuesday, February 24th in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Stutes, Representative G. Nelson, Representative McCabe, Representative Mina, Representative St. Clair, Co-Chair Representative Carrick, and myself, Co-Chair Rep. Ted Eichheit. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Thank you for that. Before we begin, I would like to thank Jordan Nicholson from House Records, as well as Doug Bridges from Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. Our committee aides are Meredith Trainer and Stafford Griffin-Sakeo. Thank you all for your hard work. On today's agenda, we have public testimony on House Bill 217, Autonomous Vehicles, and on House Bill 303, Motor Vehicle Registration. Following public testimony for each bill, we'll hear a presentation from the Alaska Truckers Association before adjourning. I'd like to now open public testimony on House Bill 217, Autonomous Vehicles, and we're going to set a 3-minute limit for public testimony, and I would ask my aide to help me with any kind of time limit. So here we go. Do we have any testifiers here in the room? Thank you for being here. Approach the dais. Speak into the mic. State your name for the record, and then begin your public testimony, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Dennis Young, D-E-N-N-I-S-Y-U-N-G. I represent the International Longshore Warehouse Union, Alaska Longshore Division, as the president right now. I first want to appreciate the fact that this committee is hearing this important piece of potential legislation. We, as an organization, wholeheartedly support the passage of HB 217 and subsequent legislation to put guardrails on autonomous vehicles, commercial vehicles, in the state of Alaska. A little bit of my history. I'm a 36-year member of the Alaska Longshore Division. I started my career in Dutch Harbor, and I'm currently a registered member here in the Port of Juneau. Our organization, we represent 250 longshoremen across the state of Alaska. The only ports we do not represent are the Port of Anchorage and the Port of Skagway. Our international organization as a whole represents longshoremen in Alaska, Canada, the West Coast, and Hawaii, which is approximately 15,000 longshoremen. I've had the fortunate opportunity to attend many AI and automation conferences in the United States, and even as recently as this past November in Portugal. The first thing that I would like to address is, while technology is here to stay, it is important that we keep our communities and our workers in mind. And by that I mean that it should be people before profit. A lot of what we see in the maritime industry, which affects Alaska tremendously, is multinational corporations that are making all sorts of promises in our ports, in our communities, and to our federal government on what they're going to be able to bring to speed up and expedite the flow and the movement of cargo. We have conducted multiple reviews about productivity, and rest assured, at this point in time, there is nothing that a person cannot do better and more efficiently than a robot. We have that capability today. The only way that any company is going to be able to effectively create a machine that can move any piece of equipment, such as what's talking about with this commercial autonomous vehicle bill, is by the utilization of people training the computer, the robot, to be able to do it.
Mr. Young, if you could wrap up your testimony in a summary, please.
No, appreciate that. With that, again, appreciate your time, and please support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 217? Seeing no one else in the room, is there anyone online? There's three folks online. Hang on here. Okay. So it looks like our first person online is Robert Singleton. Mr. Singleton, if you can put your name on the record with any affiliation and begin your testimony, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robert Singleton, and I serve as the Senior Director of Policy and Public Affairs at Chamber of Progress, a tech industry association that supports inclusive innovation. I'm here today in respectful opposition to HB 217 because it would impose a driver-owned requirement for all autonomous vehicles in Alaska, which effectively would ban the use of this highly beneficial technology as stands to create new jobs, improve road safety, and improve transportation accessibility. Furthermore, by hard-coding a driver-in requirement to every commercial AV operation with no pilot program, no permit pathway, and no sunset clause, Alaska would be the only state in the country to impose such a requirement at a time when both automated accidents and the shortage of commercial truck drivers are at an all-time high. Research shows that at least 90% of car crashes are caused by human error, mainly distracted driving and driving under the influence, both of which can be addressed with autonomous vehicles. In fact, in performing a miles-to-miles, region-to-region comparison, the 127 million autonomous vehicle miles performed last year recorded 90% fewer serious or fatal crashes, meaning that every year that the deployment of these technologies is delayed means more preventable tragedies on Alaska's roads. Rather than allowing for a performance-based passive deployment, HB 217 hard codes barriers that limit competition and delay access to technology that's already in commercial use elsewhere. Other states like Montana have enacted an AV framework that permits Level 3 automation immediately and creates a rulemaking pathway for Levels 4 and 5. Pennsylvania has adopted a performance-based guidelines for driverless operation in 2024, and even Louisiana has authorized driverless commercial truck operations in 2019. So these are the states that are already starting to see the economic impacts of AVs. In fact, Chamber of Progress research found that nationwide, replacing just 13% of vehicles on the road with AVs over the next 15 years would create roughly 500,000 jobs. And these positions range from software engineers, system operators, to vehicle inspectors and maintenance technicians. Our report also found that 82% of AV-related roles pay above the national median wage, and many do not require a college degree. Workers in production, maintenance, and repair can often enter with just a high school diploma or a post-secondary certificate and still earn middle-class wages, with demand for skilled technicians growing as AV fleets expand. And then the topic of accessibility. For 13.2% of Alaskans living with a disability, this lack of transportation access makes it difficult to reach jobs, medical appointments, and basic services. So for Alaskans in rural areas who cannot drive, whether because of age, disability, or cost, rival transportation is virtually inaccessible, and AVs could help improve that situation dramatically. So for these reasons, as well as many others cited in the written testimony, we would encourage you to oppose HB 217. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Singleton. Can I ask where you're calling from, sir?
I'm from California.
Okay, thank you. And it looks like one of our members has a question for you, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair Aisha. I appreciate it. Through the chair. Mr. Singleton, did I hear you say that this was all autonomous vehicles? Because this legislation, if I'm mistaken, only pertains to commercial. Am I correct on that,
yes,
Mr.
Chair? Yes, it just pertains to through the chair. Yes, this legislation only deals with commercial uses of AVs. So, just to clarify.
Through the chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. I thought I heard you indicate that it was all autonomous vehicles, which it is not. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Singleton. Next, we have Thor Brown. It looks like Mr. Brown is calling from Anchorage. Mr. Brown, can you put yourself on your record and then begin your three-minute testimony, please?
Yes, thank you. My name's Thor Brown.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm calling from Anchorage. I have driven trucks throughout Alaska as a construction worker and as a local freight carrier. I have been continually employed in this trade for more than 20 years, and I also spent time locally engaging with young people, encouraging them to pursue careers in trucking. I would like to endorse this bill for two primary reasons. The first being the difficulty in safely navigating a vehicle on Alaskan roadways. Whether it's extreme cold or challenging terrain, there is no substitute for a trained, qualified driver to deal with both equipment and conditions. Alaska should not be a testing ground for unreliable and new technology. The second reason, after safety, is the certain impact this will have on Alaskans' workforce. The impact of automation to commercial vehicles would be profound. In a state where one in four of the people who works here does not reside here, what we are considering is not just the impact this has in Alaska, but in the U.S. as a whole. Autonomous and remote vehicles should be viewed as what they are, a threat to America's workforce. House Bill 217 represents a small step in the right direction for safe and responsible use of this new technology. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown, for your testimony. And next, we have online Rose Palaciano. And it looks like you are calling from Olympia, Washington. Can you state your name, probably with the correct pronunciation, if I mispronounced it, and your affiliation? And you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Eichheit and members of the committee. My name is Rose Feliciano. I'm here on behalf of TechNet, and I am calling from the great city of Olympia. Safety is a top priority for TechNet and our members when it comes to the deployment of autonomous vehicles. Our members invest heavily in testing, monitoring, and compliance to ensure their vehicles meet or exceed all applicable federal standards. While we agree with the intent of HB 217, which is to ensure that all commercial vehicles operate safely on Alaska roads, we believe it could have the unintended effect of eventually preventing all autonomous vehicles from operating in Alaska altogether. I will not repeat my colleague Robert Singleton's testimony. I do want to follow up on a couple of topics that were brought up in the earlier hearing, and I wanted to provide a quick snapshot about the jobs that could be created in Alaska with autonomous commercial vehicles. First, you have to have a location to load and unload goods. You need people to do the unloading and the loading. You need people to coordinate and manage all those logistics. You also need people to manage the movement of the vehicle, determine when and where they're going to go, and coordinate all the logistics at the destination of the vehicle. You also need people to maintain and fix the vehicles, as well as people to do all the hiring and managing of all those teams. Federal government data estimates that freight volume will increase about 50% by 2050. At the same time, there is a shortage of truck drivers to move this freight, and the problem is set to get worse. The United States needs truck drivers, and autonomous vehicles can help augment the workforce to help solve supply chain challenges. TechNet appreciates the concerns about autonomous commercial vehicles, and especially in Alaska with the challenges of weather and road conditions that are a challenge for any vehicle. I would request the opportunity to work with the committee, the bill sponsor, so we can better understand your needs and discuss how autonomous vehicles could meet the needs of Alaskans in the future. For those reasons, I'm asking you not to move HB 217 forward, and certainly appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I see no other folks online. See no other folks here in the room. We're going to be closing public testimony on House Bill 217, Autonomous Vehicles, at 1:49 p.m. Public testimony is now closed on House Bill 217. Representative St. Clair, did you have a question?
No, I don't. It's more of a comment. Yes, I know, because we're probably going to be setting this aside soon. One of the testifiers mentioned levels, 0 to 4. And I only today found some information on autonomous vehicles, what it does, et cetera. And I'd like to, if I can, get this information to your staff. It's not in your book, because I unfortunately printed one copy. But it's good information, and it kind of tells us what is considered fully autonomous, what is partially autonomous, what is not really autonomous, so that give us a better understanding of, with the in-person in there, I think it's a level 3. Yeah, they're the driver, they're the fallback driver. But I will get this information to the committee. There's a lot more that we need to consider on this, and I know it's still got another committee of referral, but I would like to spend a little more time on this, if possible. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yeah, please get it to my staff as soon as you can, and we will distribute to the committee for their due consideration. Okay. We're going to set an amendment deadline for House Bill 217, autonomous vehicles, for Wednesday, February 25th at 5 p.m. So again, that's Wednesday, February 25th at 5 p.m. We'll move on to our next agenda item. I'd now like to open public testimony for House Bill 303, Motor Vehicle Registration. And we're going to set a 3-minute time limit for public testimony on this bill. Public testimony on 303 is now open. Do we have any testifiers here in the room? Okay, seeing no one in the room. Let's see if we have anyone online. Okay, looks like there's no one online. So we are going to close public testimony on House Bill 303 at 1:51 p.m. Public testimony, House Bill 303 is now closed. We're going to set an amendment deadline for House Bill 303, Motor Vehicle Registration, for Wednesday, February 25th at 5 p.m. Again, that's Wednesday, February 25th at 5 p.m. And at this time, we're going to take a short at ease to change our presentation for our next presentation. At ease. back at, on the record at the House Transportation Committee meeting. We are now going to hear from a couple representatives from the Alaska Truckers Association. They are at the dais. Ms. Benson and Mr. Pike, if you can state your phone names for the record and begin your presentation. And thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us. I am Jamie Benson. I am the president and CEO of the Alaska Trucking Association.
Thank you. My name is John Pike. I am a member of the Alaska Trucking Association.
Go ahead.
All right. We'll go ahead and get started. Let me. Is this my remote? Or, oh, just use the keyboard. Okay. Thank you. All right. So it goes without saying we all understand how important trucking is in Alaska. You have this beautiful map here, and you can see how distant we are from the lower 48 and the main shipping lines. So we rely heavily, extremely heavily, on transport, be it air, land, or sea. And I'm here to speak specifically about land, although of my 130 members, I also do represent the Port of Alaska and FedEx, all of the air shippers. So we kind of are involved in all of it. But initially, I want to talk about, you know, the role of trucking in daily life. Truckers and the trucking industry delivers nearly all consumer goods in this state. 90%. 90% of that volume comes in through the port system. Once it is into the port system, it must get on a truck and be moved. A lot of that does move on rail, too, but and air, but the majority of it moves on trucks. So everything we need for the daily convenience of our lives, for shelves to be stocked, is done through trucking. We have very unique transportation needs because of our geography and where we are, very similar to Hawaii. And I like to say that we're only similar to Hawaii in the distance and the environment. But we both have the same challenges. We have limited alternatives, and where we are makes it essential for us to supply all of the remote areas in our beautiful states.
Ms. Benson, it is our practice oftentimes to ask some questions at each slide. So I had a question.
Of course.
Just doing the math here. I think you said 90% of our goods. Can you just hit the back button with the arrow? Yeah.
Absolutely.
90% of our goods come in via the port.
Yes.
And then trucking distributes that generally.
Yes.
The other 10%?
Air.
Air.
Okay. Yeah. Air or land trucking. It's lesser for trucks to bring freight into. It does happen. It's a lifeline as well, but 90% comes through the port.
Yeah. Thank you. Please proceed.
All right, so let's get to the importance of why these corridors matter. I'm going to focus on three corridors right now that where most of the freight does travel through. One will be the Dalton Highway, the Parks Highway, and the Alcan. So everyone knows, has heard about the Dalton Highway. It is famous, the Hall Road, built in 1973. So it just celebrated its 50th anniversary. Now we're on 52. But the Dalton Highway not only supports the North Slope oil operations, which are critical to our revenue, but it supports communities. The Parks Highway is the connection between Anchorage and Fairbanks. So you can't get to Fairbanks to get to the Dalton Highway without using the parks. It links the largest population centers and facilities, movements of goods, commuters, and tourists. And you see more tourism, obviously, because of Denali along the Parks Highway. And then the Alcan, again, the only land connection to Canada and the lower 48 if the worst were to happen and we could only use the road systems, that is the Alcan. And all of these have they're, again, essential for daily life. They have a huge community impact. Any questions about that slide?
Please proceed.
All right. So the Dalton Highway, one of my favorite subjects and places. I have been very fortunate, and I will also kind of defer to my partner, John, here, about traveling on the Dalton Highway. When I first came into my role less than 2 years ago, as a lifelong Alaskan, I had never been on the Dalton. it was out of sight, out of mind. And I think that that's a common thread for most Alaskans. You know about it, you know what's up there, but it's over there. And so when I wanted to learn more about the challenges, I was offered to go on a ride. And since then, I've been on three rides up and down the Dalton Highway and care of three different amazing professional drivers. And it's so singular and unique that I can talk to you all day long. I can show you videos. I can show you pictures. You never will understand it until you actually ride it. So I'm going to throw this out there right now. Anybody who would like to do a ride on the Dalton, we can set that up for you. But the Dalton, again, it is critical. It's the only surface to the North Slope and the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. This road has, because it is rural Alaska, the road was built in 1973, 52 years of Mother Nature and us combating Mother Nature has resulted in the road as it is. But along 500 miles from Fairbanks to Prudhoe, the weather systems change nonstop, and they impact the road structure. I've heard often, well, would it be better if it was just paved? And to be honest, pavement isn't the right answer because the weather affects it so badly that all you do is it's frost heaves. So I hate to say this, but the best parts of the road are actually the gravel roads that are maintained. So actually, I'm going to turn it over to you, John. Do you have anything to add about those road conditions? Bogarting them.
So first off, the Dalton Highway is very unique. It takes a special skill set. My background is I started in a passenger seat of a Peterbilt during the pipeline and worked my way over to the other seat with my father later on and had a trucking company. Now I work for Colville. The road is the life of the slope and the communities on it. It's also turned into a great tourist industry. The road itself is 52 years old. It has had projects and band-aids for all that time. It really needs an upgrade. It needs to be looked at seriously. Over the last 4 years, I believe, 3 years, we've had about a 300% uptake in traffic on the road due to the projects like Pika and Willow and tourism. And the road's not holding up to that. So as far as a vital lifeline, it really is at risk right now.
And I'm going to show you the next slide. Let me touch on how we do have operational and staffing challenges. That in the cycle of life with the Dalton, we require a maintained safe road to travel to supply the communities, be it the North Slope, be it Utqiagvik, anybody living along that road. So we work very closely with DOT, and they've been very amenable to our needs, but they can only do so much. And right now they're in a situation where they're reacting to the road versus being proactive. They don't have the means to do that. So, our end support is for giving, whenever there's an option to increase funding or fully fund operational budget for DOT, that benefits us. And if it benefits us as an industry, it benefits you as a consumer, as a community member.
A question on that last comment. So you stated that, DOT is, for whatever reason, not up to the task. Is that a funding issue or is that a workforce issue, a staffing issue, as you see it?
I would say it's both. Right now, if you were to compare the private sector, like the North Slope, you have camps up there, and they're making those jobs very attractive. It is a unique environment. You have to be a special kind of person to live up on the North Slope for 2 to 3 week stretches and just work in negative 40 blows. It's unique. The same can be said for the drivers and for the maintenance staff on this road. Right now, DOT, the funding, and this is all, it goes through the union and negotiations, but we're not making it very attractive for the DOT to recruit folks and to retain them. There should be a geographical difference. I would highly encourage a geographical difference in pay because you shouldn't be paid the same amount as someone who's driving in Anchorage who has the comforts of Anchorage versus someone who is on the Adigan Pass. There's no service out there. There are no amenities. That is rural living at its best, and they're out in the elements, 24/7. If if we need them to be. So big difference there. So again, they require the funding to operational funding to improve their to make it more attractive. You know, are you going to take a job for $60 an hour in Anchorage or, and I'm being generous there, I think it's $40 an hour, in Anchorage or Fairbanks or on the Dalton Highway? You probably lean one way to the other and stay in Anchorage because it's safe. But if I was making upwards of $75, I could be a little more flexible. That would move me a little bit more that way.
Thank you. Co-Chair Carrick has a question.
Thank you, through your co-chair. I really appreciate especially that highlight you just had on the difference between working out on the Dalton and working in another urban part of Alaska on the roads. I think it's, you kind of got to see it. And having driven the Dalton myself, I highly encourage people to make the trip. The Brooks Range is spectacular. If nothing else, the company's really good. But I did have a question about the recent transfer to state management on the Dalton Highway corridor, and does that lead to potentially expected better proactive maintenance? Or what are some of maybe the anticipated changes from a trucking perspective about the condition of the road?
Speak to that.
So that's the 5150. So
and just for process, you always say through the chair and
sorry,
yeah,
through the chair.
It's our
through
it's
the
our
chair.
Practice. Yeah, thank you.
That goes back to the 5150 corridor. And that corridor has been tied up since 1965 with the federal government. And what happened there was during the building of the pipeline, they allowed the taps to come through and all the contractors to use pads and gravel pits and utilize the land. After that was completed, that land returned to the federal government. And DOT, the Alaska DOT, has not had access to those pits, those pads, and has cost the state a lot of money because they've had to move all their materials from either Prudhoe Bay on state lands, Coldfoot in private lands, or Fairbanks. So that access is amazing for all of us. It opens the doors for infrastructure, pullouts, community resources. It's amazing. It's a win for all of us.
And just a follow-up. And then I guess as a follow-up through the co-chair, you know, another news story I heard today, and I've heard quite a few over the last couple of years, relating to climate impacts from increased thaw of permafrost, and just thinking about how much of the Dalton Highway is built on permafrost. I appreciate you mentioning that paving the road is not really the best solution, likely because of a lot of those permafrost impacts. But what are some of the, with the 5150 decision and changing climate, like what are some of the emerging concerns on the Dalton or emerging areas of opportunity?
Through the chair, I think that's kind of a two-sided thing. It's an opportunity because now we have the resources, and we're able to take the road back and put a foundation down that will last, where we haven't in the past because all we've done is triage. We fixed the problems, we fixed the washouts. We have never had the time or the money or the resources to go in there and repair and bring the road up to state. The permafrost, it's Alaska. We cover most of it, you know, all the way to the Brooks Range. And then once you hit the other side of the Brooks Range, 18 inches down is all that thaws in the summertime. That's it. The ground is frozen. It's all ice. So it's a challenge always. And you're right. The pavement won't last. The road moves so much, and it makes it worse than it would if it's gravel. Gravel's manageable. But with that, you're going to have to put men and machines that can maintain that gravel, and that has been the challenge.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Jamie Benson here again. So I want to speak to, there are many examples that I could show you about the Dalton Highway. I'm going to speak to one or two specifically. I have a visual here. This is a washout that occurred at mile 315 just this past summer, July 2025. And it actually happened on July 14th. And DOT was very swift to respond. Very swift to respond. Obviously, this caused huge delays and setbacks. So 4 days of the repair that was absolutely necessary, there was no way not to do this repair, 4 days where about 100 to 150 trucks could not pass through here. That caused a huge delay for us and had a huge customer and operator impact. But this was, again, another Band-Aid. They put in the same materials, the same culvert that existed there before, because they are not planned for the funding for long-term repairs. So, I mean, I don't want to be, a downer, but if we have another flood this summer, it's highly, we highly anticipate that this can happen again, and if not here, along another side of the road where another similar culvert is. And that's really, what we really want to underline is we want to give DOT the opportunity to pre-plan for these things, to have the materials ready if this were to happen. Again, you're very aware of the environment that we're dealing with. It is volatile, and we need to plan for that. Control what we can control. We can't control Mother Nature, but we can control how we respond to it, to her.
Representative McCabe.
Yeah, thanks. So this has happened 5 times in the last decade. Since 2015, the Sag River has impacted the Dalton 5 times. This just happened to be the worst. There were some significant other ones all the way up to mile 415 or 413 or something like that. So I don't know that changing the alignment to escape the Sag River is going to be even possible without billions of dollars. And I'm not real sure. You can't put bridges in there because it's only frozen. I mean, it's frozen at 18 inches down. I mean, you'd have to, the Arctic engineering for a bridge would also be billions of dollars. So I'm not sure. I don't know if you're asking for more culverts. Would that help? I mean, this last washout was because it during breakup there was significant ice clogging and it overwhelmed a 30-foot culvert. That's a 30-foot culvert, I heard. So that's pretty big. So I don't know, what's the solution? Just another 30-foot culvert alongside it, or I mean, you guys see it more than I do. You drive it all the time, so. I'm not so sure. I don't know. Where's the money going to come from to do what we need to do? I mean, it's one of two roads that access the Arctic. The Arctic has trillions of dollars of resources, and we have the Dalton and the Mackenzie Road in Canada. That's the only way to get to and from the Arctic to develop our resources. And you guys know me, transportation is the key to developing resources, but how do we do that? No, yeah. Ferries. You can't take ferries up there, Louise. I'm sorry.
Through the chair.
Yes, please.
I'd like to answer that. So I don't think it's a matter of realigning the road, but it is definitely a matter of going back and reevaluating it. The 30-foot culvert in question there had been there for many, many years. When it failed, it took out the road. There's a lot of hydraulics involved in that, and maybe a second culvert would have solved that problem. It's just a matter of engineering the road the way it should have been instead of building it hastily to get a project done in the 1970s with that technology. So we're not asking, to reinvent the wheel, just to look at the wheel and maybe fix a few spokes.
Follow up?
Yeah, maybe just a comment. Maybe there's warranty. We should get a hold of BP. Maybe they, since they paid for the road, maybe they have some warranty.
Duly noted. Please continue.
All right. I did reference a second issue that I'll mention at the very end about the Beaver Slide. We'll move into the Parks Highway. And the Parks Highway and the Alcan actually face similar issues because they are mostly paved. I say mostly. I was corrected on that today. Again, higher traffic. And safety risks that we face across the state, the heavier traffic and narrow shoulders of the Parks Highway increase the safety risks. Right now, what we are dealing with on the parks is the challenges for the trucking community is that there is insufficient truck parking. And this is a national problem. It really is. But it hasn't been a big focus on Alaska when it really should be, because we are increasing our movement. And hopefully, there are projects coming up where we will continue to increase. But to do that, we need to protect our drivers and make sure that they have the ability to pull over safely and do the things they need to do to travel i.e. put on chains or brush snow off of their vehicles, and just to get out of the way of regular traffic, and that is more dangerous on the parks and the Alcan. We had a situation recently where we could not pull over into a pullout. There was an actual pullout, but it wasn't maintained because we didn't have the staffing to maintain it. So the driver had to pull over, throw a set of chains on, and what ensued was a series of incidents where a tourist slammed into a vehicle that was stopped. So it's very unsafe for us not to have this basic infrastructure when we're moving trucks up and down the parks, the Alcan, the Dalton, the Glen Highway. All of our road systems need to have sufficient truck parking and pullouts and maintained. Really, if they're there, maintained. Again, you see the same thing with seasonal weather closures, the need for infrastructure investment. That's really across the board. And then for the Alcan, I did mention, you know, it's one of the major lifelines. If everything were to fall apart, how would we get in and out of here? It's essential to the land route for commercial freight. It is a smaller percentage that moves through there because we do have the port, thank goodness. But, again, facing winter weather challenges, there is an upgrade planned for the Alcan Port of Entry, which I believe is in the analysis stage right now. There are three firms that are vying for that project. But that's going to help increase movement into the state and also increase, you know, security coming in and out of Alaska. We do have quite a bit of traffic that comes through Canada. We do have Canadian drivers who come into our infrastructure, and we are actually personally working to make sure that they are prepared to work in this environment, because we've had some issues where folks come into this environment from the lower 48 in Canada, and I'm sorry, the Dalton Highway is not I-5. It is not. It never will be. But people are not prepared. Tourists are not prepared. Long-haul drivers are not prepared. So we're doing a lot of proactive work to make sure that everybody comes up that road, and working with DOT to make sure that they have the safety means to be safe on that road.
A question about the port of entry project you referenced. Can you just briefly say a little more about that?
I just read up on myself on this a little bit yesterday, but they are upgrading the building. I want to say it was built in the early 70s, but they're upgrading it because it's deteriorating. You know, it's sitting there on the border, and they don't have, with the amount of traffic that's coming through there with the commercial and, you know, personal traffic, now it's, so all the requirements that are required to come through customs and agriculture, they need more space. They really need more space for it to be safe for everyone. So, yeah, I think that they're looking at like a 2030 end game on that for it to be completed. But it's kind of in the analysis bidding stage right now.
Co-chair Carrick.
Thank you. Through the co-chair. Yeah, I just actually want to give DOT a shout out, because the Alaska side of the Alcan has gone through a ton of improvements in the last few years. And driving it is a totally different experience than it was a few years ago. This is kind of a rhetorical question. What can we do to get the Yukon government to improve their side of the Alcan? Because literally the second you cross the border until you get basically to south of Whitehorse, it's terrible. And we've got the same 10% trucks that the ones that are coming up the Alcan have to drive that. I can't hardly navigate some of those frost heaves and potholes in a Subaru. I can't even imagine what it's like for a large truck. So is there anything we can do to encourage the Yukon government to fix their side of the Alcan?
Well, through the chair, I think the best bet there would be for us as the Alaska Trucking Association. We actually do have a couple Canadian truck members, is communicating through them the importance of it, because when you start talking about companies' bottom line, that's where you get your message across. And so building those bridges with them to communicate to their government, here's the need. Here's the need, having the same conversation, but in Canada, about why it's important for them to maintain roads so that we can transport goods. And I know that we have some kind of blurriness with our relationship with Canada right now, but it's never not going to be there. So I can say that on my end, I will work with my Canadian members to have that conversation. Because you're right, our DOT, they do an amazing job, but it starts right there at the border.
It's so noticeable. And Representative St. Clair is nodding because we both drive to and from session every year. And I think we've all experienced it. And I wonder how much more trucking activity we could have coming up the Alcan if some of those issues were improved. Because, the Alaska side of the Alcan is in surprisingly good shape even compared to a few years ago.
Yeah, and through the chair, I can appreciate that because this this update to the port of entry, I would love to see that inherently increase traffic. We want it all. We want to have everybody coming through Alaska, but right now it's super challenging.
Thank you. Representative McCabe.
Yeah, thanks. And this is maybe a question for the committee, maybe Representative Stutes. Probably, didn't we send a bunch of money to Canada a couple years ago for the Chakwak Highway upgrade? $27 million, I think.
Something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we should see how well they spent it. Maybe we should bring them in here.
And I'll just add, for a period of 4 years, I traveled that highway twice a year, moving to Alaska over 4 years, and it was always amazing, the Yukon part. And, you know, I've had friends from the lower 48 that want to drive up. I say, hey, it's a great trip. It's a long trip, but drive up, but be really careful, and especially if you're on a motorcycle. You know, you want to arrive safely. So I'd be interested in how the Yukon government could do better. We just sent them a resolution last year saying how we really appreciate the Canadian government, so maybe we'll get some good vibes out of that. Representative McCabe.
And in that resolution, I put an amendment that if they didn't straighten up and fly right, we were going to take that $7.2 million away.
Friendly but tough. Please proceed.
All right, so let's underline the operational funding and maintenance needs. This picture here, I actually took this on the Dalton Highway because I took a picture every time I did see a grader because obviously, you know, it's on my radar, like, are these guys out there? Where are they? What are they doing? And so this person happened to be out there and was doing a great job, but we need this constantly. We don't need it again in a reaction to the snow falling. We need them out there cleaning up constantly, and they just do not have the budget to provide that right now. When it really comes down to it, it is a safety and economic impact. These should have been flipped around. Safety is the most important thing. The men and women that drive this highway, they're amazing individuals, and we are not doing all that we can to ensure that they are safe on this road. When I drove out of Prudhoe last year, and it was negative 40, blowing winds, and an issue that we see with the vehicles operationally is with the DEF systems is they'll be affected by the weather, and the vehicle will start to derate. The derating is a scare tactic, but it's a reality. The vehicle started to derate. We're 50 miles out, and it suddenly hit me. What could happen? We are 50 miles out. I don't know if another vehicle is coming along. You know, the vehicle basically is saying, you need to find service in 30 minutes to an hour, or I'm going to shut down. And you can be as prepared as anybody out there, but you are never going to be physically prepared to be in that environment out alone. And, you know, it's life or death. I hate to say it like that, but it is life or death when we're putting people in these road conditions where that's something that they may have to deal with.
We just recently had an example of this. We had a driver go north in the blow. You know, it wasn't any different than any other blow. It partially plugged the filters of the truck, the air filters, which created the after treatment to heat up. And it actually got to the point where it shut the truck down. She was in about 45 below zero. But it had got so hot, the truck was at risk to burn. And she was only 15, 20 minutes away from another driver. But if she had stood out there for even 5 minutes, she could be losing digits. She could be harmed, you know, either hypothermia or even worse. So the reality of the haul road is, It takes a special driver, and it takes a lot of preparation to make that happen. The DOT does a really great job, but they have, from where they were 20 years ago to where they are now, they've consolidated camps, they've reduced numbers in the camps, and they've resorted to plow trucks versus the graders, and it's cost all of us something. So it would be great for you guys to take a chance to go up there. Like we said, you're invited anytime. To go see what they see every day and experience it yourself. Because there's a whole lot difference between being told how lonely you can be and being out there by yourself with no resources.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Eichheit. One comment, this is a thing that I talked with some other representatives from ATA yesterday, and I recognize it's an EPA deal, but we as a state should be doing all we can to maybe at least get an exemption on these requirements on these trucks. That's it's federal requirements. It's not something that we can do as a state, or I think it would be done. But it really is a life or death thing. So I don't know what that would be. I mean, I see Kevin raise his hand, but like that's something that we definitely should be looking into doing. Two quick questions. One is, how many trucks actually run the Dalton? And then the second question is, you, which came up, you talked about plow trucks versus graders. So one is just a numbers question, but then what difference do you see in plow trucks versus graders from the DOT?
Through the chair. So I'll start with the equipment issue. So plow trucks, they do a very quick job. They move the snow off the road, but they don't move it out of the roadway. They don't have the ability to clean the ditches. They don't have the ability to move the water, the snow, which affects the roadbed in the springtime. But they do clear the road very rapidly. The difference with a grader is it comes out and it cuts the material, and it can actually move the snow away from the road. And in the summer, the difference is there is that you can't use a plow truck, but you utilize a grader everywhere. It cuts the frost heave out, it relays it out, and then you have a compactor come in and you have a road surface again. So as far as many trucks on a day is, it can be anywhere between, during the busy season, it can be 100 trucks to 150 or even 200 trucks a day that run north. Or in the summertime, while it's slow and we're beating up and down the road, it's probably 70 to 100 trucks a day.
And
I'd like to add, that's, you know, I know we're focused on oil and gas here, but remember those trucks are carrying groceries, not just to the oil fields, but to other communities. They're hauling fuel that keeps homes warm. They are actually doing a service beyond creating industry.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. Yeah, so there are two acts working their way through Congress right now that were introduced in late 2025 that would grant year-round exemptions from DEF requirements, DEF, diesel emissions fluid, and it would also prevent the limp mode, which is what you're talking about. I think maybe Representative Congressman Begich is involved. I'm not sure, but there's also a congressman from Wyoming involved. And there was also some relief granted, I think, in January, just a month ago, where DOJ said they will no longer pursue charges against somebody that's deleting the DEF, doing what they call the diesel deletion. And there are many that are run. There's groups that go to Canada and have it done because Canada was smart enough to say that hay in cold weather. So this bill would, I think it's north of the 59th parallel, so maybe we should send a letter of support maybe a resolution, you know, and certainly if you guys asked us, send a letter requesting that we somehow support this or do a resolution in support, we could send that to our Congress, congressional delegation, and see if we can get that past the finish line pretty quickly. So that was sort of an answer to Representative Nelson.
Did you have a comment on that?
I was just going to say, through the chair, thank you. We appreciate that. We appreciate your knowledge of that issue. It is Senator Sullivan who proposed the bill. And, yeah, we have this discussion quite a bit. But if we had your support, it would have weigh a lot heavier than just our association. But working together, I think that, again, you know, we like to say that Alaska is unique and it's different, but we want all the amenities of, you know, that everybody else has in Lower 48. The reality is we are unique and different, and we need different guidelines and regulations for this state. Someone shouldn't be punished for doing what they need to do to operate in this environment. And that's what's happening.
Follow up. So yeah, thanks. And happy to do that. I'm sure that we as a body debate resolutions for like ever, but something like this seems to be a no brainer. And you know, if you send us a request, I think that we're happy to put something together, and it probably have to come from this committee now at this point. Right. So, not speaking for the co-chairs, but I'm sure we could convince them to put something like that in and get it through. So,
and just a comment on this whole train of talking. I was just watching a YouTube yesterday about driving four-wheelers, regular vehicles, up to the Arctic Circle, and they were talking about carrying extra filter, and they showed where somebody came up in the filter housing filled with snow, and of course that blocks the air, and vehicles don't work without oxygen. And we also have been talking about an older vehicle, a registration bill, and I own both older vehicles and newer ones, and newer ones are great until they're not. The older ones, they don't go into limp mode. They just won't work, and you can usually fix them. So I prefer the older vehicles sometimes. So thank you for that.
All right. I think this really goes without saying. There's a job and wage impact. We, the trucking industry, we support over 12,000 jobs. Of my 130 members, sorry, there's thousands of drivers out there and everyone else who works in the supply chain and logistics to make sure that these trucks are safe and on road, moving on road, dispatched. A lot of my members are smaller, locally owned companies. There's a lot of owner operators out there. We have all the big dogs, you know, Linden, Sourdough, Carlisle. But I mean, there's a lot of small companies out there that we do support. But they all serve the community. They all have a need. Last mile transport is what we call basically, you know, when that freight gets to its destination, its port. So I'll use FedEx as an example. FedEx is basically last mile transport. Comes in from the airport, it's distributed, and it's dispersed. That is last mile. So the goods that we transport are essential, obviously. I posed a question to in our lunch and learn the other day. I had everybody raise their hand who had ordered something online in the past week, and almost, you know, unanimously, that's our lives now. Our lives are based on, we have a need, we have a venue to get it quickly, and it happens very transparently for the majority of folks. So that's why we are here to say, behind that transparency is a million folks trying to make that happen safely. And, you know, again, to reiterate, anything you can do to support DOTs getting increased funding or being fully funded, that helps us. Anytime truck parking becomes a topic of conversation, and I feel like you'll be hearing more about that from us in the next few months, your support would be greatly appreciated. All the issues, the permafrost, the frost heaves, again, they're uncontrollable if we don't. You know, we know they're going to happen. We know they're going to happen. But if we have the means and the equipment and the people, we can make this a safer for everyone. And that would really reduce the emergency communication. Once, you know, a lot of you go on the Dalton, you'll see we run out of service. I think we hit service maybe twice along 500 miles. That's kind of scary. Not because we're all addicted to our phones or anything, but because if something were to happen, you have no one to call.
Representative McCabe.
Yeah, so thanks. Well, you know, if you guys had quit paying your truckers so much, then they wouldn't be leaving the DOT to go work for you guys, you know. No, what I really wanted to say was The emergency comms, do you guys have sat phones? Do you have like a GPS reporting in the truck, like a transponder kind of thing? I know the DOT is putting those into their equipment. Are we just totally out of...
Through the chair to answer. So we use a lot of different things now. We have InReach. We have Starlink now. We have some cell service. And then, of course, we have the old-fashioned, the radios in the trucks. And they reach out anywhere from 10 to 20 miles on the big radios. And with a CB, only maybe a mile or two, depending on the terrain. It's gotten better. But 15 minutes out there in the cold makes a difference between life and death. And none of those, you go down roads anywhere in the country, you'll see a little post there with a phone on it. Those don't exist up there. Nowhere. So you're relying on the guy that's 5 miles ahead of you or 5 miles behind you to be able to rescue you by communication.
Follow up? Yeah, so in Little Plains, which I've been flying around Alaska for more time than I care to think about, we used to go from being way out there in the boonies with no contact with anybody, and now they have these things, Spider, I think it's called. It's a satellite thing. It tracks the airplane wherever you are, goes to your dispatch. Is there any kind of thing like that for the Dalton that keeps track of even the ships? We have this place here in Juneau that has the Marine Exchange that can track a ship, and if it slows down below 6 knots, that dispatcher, that guy watching that is like an air traffic controller. It alerts him, and he knows that there's an issue with it. So is there something like that with their trucks where if they're in the middle of nowhere and they come to a stop, eventually somebody's calling them and saying, hey, what's going on?
Through the chair. So, yeah, we have systems like Samsara, and it tracks it through cell service. So it will, as soon as the truck comes back into service, it will load it up. If it doesn't come back into service, there's somebody looking for it. But again, time is potentially life-threatening. Those systems are wonderful. And of course, now with the advance in, Starlink and Wi-Fi on the road, it's helped a lot, but it's a huge expense.
Thanks.
Co-Chair Carey.
Thank you, through the co-chair. I have just a general question as we think about some of these issues, which is how valuable is it for the Trucking Association, and especially truckers on the Dalton Highway, to have the people making decisions about operations and maintenance and resource allocation be regionally knowledgeable about some of those conditions at DOT? Like, how valuable is that?
Through the chair, I think it's absolutely important. I think that you have to know your job, right? And you have to live it a little bit, especially on the slope. The first 62 miles is flat and it blows a million miles an hour or it's perfect. You get into into the Brooks Range and you can be in an avalanche without any warning. You get along Dietrich to Coalfoot and even to the river, and there's flooding and all that sort of thing. And the guys that work those camps really understand that. I think their hands are tied a lot, but I think you have the knowledge already. I think they just need to be let go and put out there to get it done. They really have the ability to do it.
Thank you. Just a follow-up comment. We've got this, it's sort of a rhetorical question because having experienced the Dalton personally, I don't think there's any substitute for experience, and I certainly don't have the experience of the truckers who do that as their regular job, and I appreciate talking about it. There's a proposal that DOT is going forward with right now where they're essentially consolidating regional work into consolidated sectors based on job class rather than regional offices. And I just have a lot of concerns about that, especially as we talk about going forward some of the needs that our different regions are going to have. I don't expect somebody here in Juneau to have that lived experience with the Dalton that your truckers have, but I do expect somebody based in Fairbanks and working on Dalton Highway maintenance and operations to understand that. And I just worry that, as a committee for all of us, I just worry that we're seeing a departure from that a little bit. So thank you for sharing that perspective.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Through the chair, I would like to say that we were just made aware of those changes recently, and I'm not quite sure what the impetus is of that. Is it funding? Is it staffing? But I will just tell you from my personal experience, even though I had 30-plus years in the trucking industry, until I got into this role and I got out there and I saw what was going on, I couldn't know it or speak to it. So it's very important that if you're in Fairbanks, you understand Fairbanks. If you're working Northern Region, you understand Northern Region. The state is great and varied, and Anchorage and Valdez and Seward, and they're all completely different. You have to have that base knowledge. So I would agree there.
Thank you.
Before we go to Rep. Nelson, you said something about their hands being tied. Who are you referring to, and what's tying their hands?
I'm referring to DOT, the men and women working the road. They have financial restrictions, hour restrictions, and unless they're called out after hours, they're not out on the road. They have the ability to do the work. They have the knowledge and the special training to handle almost anything out there, but they don't have the resources to get it done, and I don't think there's enough of them.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I would also echo what Co-Chair Carrick said, and I spoke with your representatives about that. I think the DOT is trying to increase their efficiency, which is not a good or not a bad thing at all for a government agency to do, and I guess the devil's in the details on who gets in those positions, right? Because if it is somebody that, you know, just going off of it, it's the where and how is going to be delivered at the local level still. So that is, I share those concerns, but it really, the devil's in the details on who gets in those positions. The question that I had was, I don't want to discount anything. We've had these conversations with problems that are happening in Anchorage as well. So not to discount, I mean, we all recognize the threat of driving the Dalton. But the question that I had was, how many people have actually been in a position where they've either died or been injured because help was not close enough, if that makes sense, or because communications was lacking in these cold weather environments?
Through the chair, I can speak for my personal experience through the company I'm working for. We've had two in the last month.
That's more than I thought.
There are two memorial markers all up and down that road for mm-hmm. drivers who have passed due to all kinds of situations and conditions. Mm-hmm. It's a sobering reminder of the risk that you undertake.
Follow up. And I really appreciate that. And I think the reason that I wanted to ask that is it's easy for us to see when, you know, it's in a town and the threat is real, but it's removed. You know what I'm saying? And so that's why I just so you had two in the last month. Is that average, you think?
Through the chair, I can't really say what would be average because there's so many companies on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that every driver's out there with the potential of being alone for a time, that risk is, you know, unmeasurable.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you could go company to company and you'd hear story after story. Not all of them are life threatening, but they all have the potential. You know, frostbite, hypothermia. Mm-hmm. You know, being left out to the elements or the wildlife. It's all there, and it's you make a great point. You know, when you live in Anchorage or Juneau or Fairbanks, you don't know what they're really seeing or doing or going through because 7-Elevens are on the corner, right? So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Representative McCabe?
Thanks. I am wondering, you know, when you said their hands are tied and oftentimes they're not out on the road, is that a union contract that's keeping them tied up, or is there a mechanism inside the contract to keep them moving? How does that work? I mean, it's they don't obviously have the same restrictions that drivers do, although the restrictions that Senator Myers told us the other day were way higher than I ever thought they were going to be, 15 hours or something. But
So through the chair, I don't work for the state of Alaska, so I can only explain what I know from conversations. Those guys are limited to a certain amount of hours a week, and overtime is a really big deal, and there's not enough of them not to have to be in that situation. The other thing is that after hours, whatever those hours are, it's usually 6 to 6 is working hours, and then after that, they have to be called out before they can come out and do any road work. So that's 12 hours of the roads literally being blowed in, falling apart, washing away every day.
Thanks.
Please proceed.
All right. I just want to, you know, I have a closing statement. Alaska's economy, the communities, and the families, we rely on the condition of all three corridors. And I like to highlight the Dalton, but it is important to say that the parks and the Alcan are extremely critical as well. When our highways fail, trucking feels it first, delays, the higher operating costs, and the safety risks. But really, every Alaskan pays the price. The investment in maintenance, staffing, stabilization, and truck parking is the most cost-effective path to safety, reliability, and affordability. The Alaska Trucking Association and our member carriers, we stand ready to partner with you, the legislature, to keep Alaska supplied, connected, and moving. And I would love it. I'm going to give you guys a little homework. If you would go to the Alaska Trucking Association Facebook page, there is a video that we put on there that you can see visually. It's 5 minutes. I apologize. It's kind of lengthy, but it shows you the varied types of situations that you are in on that road, very particular to the Dalton Highway. So please, and your friend and ours, Mr. Rob Myers, his truck is featured, not him, but his truck is featured. But I think it tells a really great story about what these men and women are doing out there for our communities and our state. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Benson and Mr. Pike. Are there any questions? Last questions. I represent St. Clair.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Benson, we met yesterday and had some lengthy conversations. Specifically, you mentioned funding at least 3 times in this presentation. And we know that the meet the match is it's actually still in limbo with the reconsideration of the vote. I have touched base with the co-chairs here, and it appears that based on that vote tomorrow, we'll see if there's another appropriation coming out of finance before we try and push one out of here. But as a last resort, I would like the committee to entertain a possible committee bill. I know we normally don't do funding and appropriations, but this is something that we need to do. So I thank you for all your folks and everyone that came in, and it's been a good experience for me. Thank you.
Through the chair, thank you. It has been, we've had some really great conversations, and I'm especially glad that we were all here to have these conversations with Alaska Trucking and AGC here at the same time. It's highly important to both of us. So any support needed to make it happen, we're here.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So one more thing, because we had the 217 earlier on, I wonder what the trucking association's position on platooning is going to be. So that's one of the things we talked about yesterday, John. The platooning is a autonomous trailer that is following a truck with a driver in it, and it's sort of set up so that if the truck reacts to the human and comes to a panic stop or something, the trailer will as well. So it's just another trailer, but it's not physically connected to the. So wondering if you guys are going to have a position on that. When you mentioned it yesterday, or when Joey mentioned it, I looked it up because I was kind of fascinated. So I'm wondering if you're going to have a position on that. Or
can I cover it?
Yeah.
So through the chair, we do not have an official position. When House Bill 217 came up last year, we were approached and we could not come to a full agreement on support for or against. So we do not have an official position. But I will say this. Alaska is not the lower 48. We're dealing with an environment that I would love to see autonomous vehicles happen here one day. That is, we are there. You know, if you've ever been in the lower 48 and driven in a Waymo, we are there, or you have a Tesla. But I don't think you can discount emotional intelligence of humans right now, not in Alaska. Love to see it happen for the growth and for the advancement of the technology. But Alaska has, we have some work to do. Hey, if we had a paved roadway that was perfect all the way to Dalton, yes, but that's not the reality.
Thanks. So quick follow-up. Yeah, so can you even haul doubles on the Dalton, or is it still restricted, or was it restricted?
Through the chair. it has been tried in the past. It does not work. the grades on the haul road are far surpass the average roadway, okay, and the poles and the weight, and when you're driving truck, you think a lot about tail weight. We call it tail weight, mm-hmm. And if it's not on the drivers, it isn't going to do you any good. So, yeah, that has been tried.
Thanks.
Co-chair Carey.
Thank you. Through the co-chair, I just, as one closing comment, I know today we talked about a lot of the roads that are really important for freight and commerce and industry, but just wanted to highlight a couple of other, and I know there's many more, not comprehensive, but just ones I have familiarity with, highways that really need a lot of improvement and work for just the communities that live near them and that have a lot of traffic. Or tourism traffic. The top of the world highway is in really awful, like truly, truly monumentally awful shape. And we have tourists that come up through Canada and do the whole Gold Rush experience. They take the ferry up to Skagway. They drive through Whitehorse. They go to Dawson City, and then they come through to the interior. I don't know if I've ever seen a worse road in the state as that one, and it's considered a highway. The southern portion of the Richardson is also gone through a lot of repairs, still needs a lot of work, has basically no shoulders in a lot of areas, and is trafficked quite frequently by Alaskans. And the Steese Highway, from the entirety of it, from Fox to Circle, we've had multiple pedestrian deaths because there's no shoulder on that road. The community of Circle can sometimes not get in and out of there. There's so many other highways in Alaska we didn't touch upon, but I just wanted to point out three that I'm familiar with that also need a lot of support and work. But I recognize they're also not, you know, trucking association frequented roads.
Through the chair, they are. The Taylor Highway, the over the top, they're all mining roads. All of our members bring fuel, equipment, groceries into those places, into those communities. And yes, you know, we come back to the same thing. We have not built a road in this state in 30 plus years. And we haven't gone back to update the roads that we have. So there's not a single road in the state of Alaska right now that isn't on our radar. We supply this whole entire state with all the goods that it needs. Most of our roads don't have a big enough airport for stuff, or don't have rail access, or even river barge access. But we can get equipment there with trucks where other things can't.
I think as a follow-up to the co-chair, I think in the in future years, it would also be really great to talk about some of the overlap on those other roads. I know they're not the highest trafficked roads, but we should show some pictures of the Taylor Highway, for example. It just is good for folks to understand, you know, some of the traffic that is on other roads in Alaska too, and the condition of these highways. And I was asked by the mayor of Chicken to mention the Taylor Highway, so that's where that came from.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Since we're mentioning highways, just want to mention the Glen. Just a side note. But one thing I wanted to give you the opportunity to put on the record too is we're, you know, obviously the LNG, aka LNG project is a big one, and I was talking with some of your representatives. I was wondering if you could just, for the record, put how many truckloads of pipe and the amount of fuel that is estimated right now that is going to be delivered by truckers for that project.
Through the chair, through the estimates that we've heard right now, is there's about 28,000 loads of materials. That does not include groceries or fuel. During this last boom, through Pica and Willow, we were seeing companies running 85 loads of fuel per week, multiple companies. So to give you an idea.
And what is a load of fuel?
It varies from anywhere from about 94 to 9,800 gallons per truck. And we move gas, diesel, and jet fuel to all those locations.
Okay. See, no further questions, and that's good because our time is rapidly running out. I would like to say thank you, Ms. Benson, Mr. Pike, for a really excellent presentation. You said some things I haven't heard before, so I feel further educated. I also did hear very with keen interest about the invitation to go on a truck ride. I had approached Senator Rob Myers about that after a local journalist publicized a ride with him, and I was quite envious. So I might take you up on that. But anyways, thank you for talking about trucking and maybe the invisible infrastructure, people working every day to make sure Alaskans have the things they need to live and prosper. So I really appreciate your presentation.
Thank you so much for your time, all of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes our work today. The next House Transportation Committee meeting will be this Thursday, January 20. February. Excuse me. February.
26.
February 26. Where's my gavel? And it's at 1 o'clock p.m. in room 124. On Thursday, we'll consider any proposed amendments for House Bill 217 and House Bill 303. With no further business, this meeting of the House Transportation Committee is adjourned at 2:57 p.m.